Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Jorge M. Mercado, MD, and Stephen Kovacs, DO, about the importance of early lung cancer detection. Dr. Mercado is a clinical associate professor in the Department of Medicine at the NYU Grossman School of Medicine and the associate chief of pulmonary critical care and sleep medicine at NYU Langone Hospital in Brooklyn, New York. Dr. Kovacs is chief of the Division of Pulmonary Medicine at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, Hammett, as well as co-coordinator of the UPMC Hammett Comprehensive Lung Center in Erie, Pennsylvania. In our exclusive interview, Drs. Mercado and Kovacs discussed the importance of multidisciplinary approaches to lung cancer screening and management, barriers to lung cancer screening that affect how early certain patients are diagnosed with this disease, and where the future of lung cancer detection and treatment is headed.
I'm Dr. Stephen Kovacs. I am the chief of the Division of Pulmonary. I am also the co-director of the Comprehensive Lung Center at UPMC Hammett.
Jorge Mercado. I'm an associate professor of medicine at NYU Langone School of Medicine. I'm the director of pulmonary section of NYU Langone Brooklyn and the director of bronchoscopy at NYU Langone Brooklyn. And I'm also associate chief of the section pulmonary critical care in NYU Langone Brooklyn.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mercado and Dr. Kovacs, for taking the time to speak with me today on an episode of Onc Live On Air to discuss the importance of early lung cancer detection. Just to start off, in your practice, how often do patients present with early stage lung cancer?
Probably not as often as we would like to see. And I would say that because, unfortunately, by the time patients realize that they're symptomatic with things like lung cancer, it's usually late. Unfortunately, it's typically a much later stage for that. So early stage lung cancer is typically asymptomatic and people really don't know they have it. So when we can find that, whether it's through screening, which we like to continue to screen the most appropriate patients for that, but also incidentally, you know, these nodules are found in ERs and doctor's offices and anywhere there's that a CAT scan or another imaging is being done, we really pride ourselves in really kind of moving those patients forward to get them to a diagnosis as quickly as possible. Early stage lung cancer has the highest chance of survival. So the more we can do to work in that space, and that's where Dr. Mercado and I have spent pretty much most of our career in, is actually in the peripheral lung fields, in the places where these nodules are small, and in the areas that are typically very hard to get to by advancing with different technologies and techniques in order to find these earlier than could have ever been found before, and also doing this so in a minimally invasive way, where not every single one of these are undergoing surgery, especially in patients with lung cancer that tend to also have other disease processes like COPD and heart disease, and makes it very difficult for them to undergo a lot of anesthesia and a lot of very difficult surgical procedures. So being able to find lung cancer with these newer technologies that have really kind of taken off over just the last 5 to 10 years has really started to move the needle. And we're starting to finally find a stage shift in these patients where before every patient would come in with symptomatic was advanced stage. Now, as we're seeing these earlier nodules and as we're able to do more with them to really kind of move them through and undergo a bronchoscopic diagnosis and a bronchoscopic stage to work closely with our oncologists, give them the most information up front, those patients have the best options and tend to have the best survival.
To add to it, Dr. Kovacs, you know, really it's important that we see more early lung cancer patients. We're doing a very bad job as physicians in general. Granted, this is a new screening technique, you know, the low-dose cancer screening, you know, with CAT scans. And we're really kind of like what Dr. Kovacs was saying, trying to really move the needle to increase the number of people, but only 3% or less are actually showing up for screening in our clinics. So we need to be doing a much better job for more early lung cancer screenings come. And, you know, it's important that at the time where we were needing to actually start looking at these lung nodules that could be from a lot of things, we now have the tools to go after these lung nodules in a non-invasive manner so that we can, in a multidisciplinary approach, see what's the best for those patients.
I've had the good fortune to know Dr. Mercado a long time. We actually trained in our fellowship together. And when we started, which now is unfortunately a very long time ago, it seems like, we had very limited options. The tools we had were a standard bronchoscope. You know, when we started, there wasn't even things like endobronchial ultrasound. There wasn't things that allowed us to really kind of push the needle forward on that. So when we trained, it was just in very basic techniques. But afterwards, you know, when we started to see the different technologies, such as navigational bronchoscopy, such as endobronchial ultrasound, and now working in the space of doing robotic bronchoscopy and using technology like Celtivity that allows us to see tissue at the time of biopsy, it really has dramatically changed. We've had to probably learn more now than we did when we were even in training together. But to be on the forefront of pushing that needle forward, we realized how much of a need that was in the oncology space. As much as we liked doing these procedures and being on the cutting edge, there was a huge need for oncologists to get these tissues earlier because, you know, on the flip side of that, you know, what did they have? They had, you know, CT-guided needle biopsies, which is great to go after a nodule, but you don't know what the lymph nodes are doing. You can't stage someone with a CT needle biopsy. Or you had a surgical approach, which in early stage, you find it is definitive. However, in later stage, those options are very limited. So you're doing a biopsy with a surgical approach and patients are dealing with all the comorbidities and just issues that go along with having surgery. So being able to now change that conversation, you know, where before we would find either a late stage cancer, well, now we can say, you know, patient's got a stage 1A adenocarcinoma with a negative mediastinum and getting enough tissue, we're doing serologic testing for EGFR and ALKs and all the different mutations and being able to present that to our oncologist, it's really kind of opened the door for them as well. I love working with my oncologist because they really do appreciate everything that we do, but we're really helping them do what they do best and deal with cancers at all stages, but where they're most rewarded is the earlier stages where they can make the highest difference. So having this multidisciplinary approach where also we were in training, everybody was in a silo. You never really talked to oncology much. You kind of stayed amongst your own clique, so to speak. So now that has changed completely. The conversations we have with thoracic surgery, with oncology, and what we all have together, where it's not just once a month at a tumor board, it's multiple times a day where we're discussing these patients and really trying to make sure we're doing the right thing and moving them forward, has opened up the doors to a lot of opportunity for all of us to both find cancer and then work together to eradicate it.
Can you describe some of the barriers to lung cancer screening that can influence how early a patient is diagnosed with lung cancer?
I can start with that since, you know, we're in two different settings, actually, and it's very interesting. We can talk about that. But, you know, Dr. Kovacs and I worked in Erie, Pennsylvania, and I can tell you now I moved to Brooklyn. I'm Brooklyn, New York. It's very different in terms of, you know, diversity. We're talking of millions of people, third largest city by itself. It's a borough, but by itself is the third largest city in the US. And we have significant, very different, but significant barriers to lung cancer screening. First of all, when you're talking about multiple communities in the same borough, in the same space, you have to approach this very differently. First, the barrier of language, trying to get, you know, the Asian population, the Latino population, you know, the Arabic, the Orthodox Jewish population. There's a lot of barriers inherently in each community that for some reason it's not happening in other realms of medicine. That's actually one of the things that we're trying to break, is to try to really create a comprehensive approach to talking to this community. So that involves, in fact, something that we're trying to do actively these days, is really kind of reaching out and going into these communities, talking to community leaders to try to expand and distribute the knowledge that this is a program that is available, that is necessary for people that are still smoking or people that have quit smoking in the last 15 years. They are between the ages of 50 and 80 years old. You can imagine that that's a lot of people. But again, you know, it's not in the collective mindset that, for example, a mammogram or a colonoscopy is out there. You know, people do know that you have to do those things when you reach a certain age. There's really no discussion. You know, I don't turn on the TV or social media, and everywhere is, have you talked to your doctor about lung cancer screening? It's not in the conversation yet. you know, it's kind of like the new kid in the block. It's a sort of new screening, but we haven't really seen that. And as you know, lung cancer is still the number one killer in the US for cancers. It's not the most common, but it's the most likelihood to kill you if you get it. In fact, the number itself is more than the second and the third combined, which is breast and colon. So it's extremely important. It's a very, very tough disease and is a very hard diagnosis to make. And that's why Dr. Kovacs and I are really trying to push each of each other in our community to get this screening as soon as possible.
Yeah, it's a good point, George. I mean, you can even throw pancreas in there. Lung cancer still kills more people than all three of those combined. I mean, it's crazy to think about it. Yeah, you bring up great points because the education from a patient standpoint is important. The other big barrier we have too is getting these tests ordered. So in many communities, this is done at the PCP level. So their family physician, you know, is sitting down with them, talking them about this. But, and if you saw that recently, there was a paper came out, I think it was in like the Journal of General Internal Medicine, that said, if a physician, a family physician has to go through following all the national care guidelines that they go through, so whether it's mammograms, colon cancer, lung cancer, depression, every the disease process that's got a screen to it, it would take them 26.7 hours a day on average to see just the average number of patients and do all of those things. It's really very cumbersome. It's one other screening they have to do. It's another question they have to ask. And not that they don't want to, it's just that the process with everything is just really, really difficult. You know, George, as you said, this has been kind of the newer kid on the block. So there's all those other screening things that have been going on for years and years. And now we're just a few years in on lung cancer, and it's an added step. So I think supporting family physicians and general internists and people that see these patients up front with systems in place that can help them mobilize the appropriate patients through, whether it's screening initially through the medical record, or even, you know, you have centers that are looking at specialty clinics where patients who are smokers who are either interested in screening or can be referred by their PCP to these clinics and just kind of take that piece away from it. Like, oh, you're a smoker, you smoke for a long time, you may qualify for screening, I'm going to refer you over here so that they can figure that out. So you're seeing both sides of that. And I think the answer is probably a combination of all those things. You know, we've seen it with our cardiologists. So one of the things we do when we do lung cancer screening CTs is that many times the radiologists will also report out things like coronary artery disease that they happen to see when they do the scan. So we will send those to the cardiologists. And now they've realized that looking in their population, they see smokers that probably need screened anyway. And it just was kind of a backwards effect of us sending them for something that we weren't even looking for. Now they're sending these patients for screening. We've had oncologists to send for screening. They just happen to see patients who are, you know, they've had either another cell type of cancer. Let's say they're 5 or 10 years out. They're doing well, but they smoked for a long time. We're seeing that as their routine scans are kind of done for their original primary cancer. But now, you know, they're looking for other things too that could pop up. Because unfortunately, when you have one cancer, you have a higher chance of having more than one. So we're seeing this from multiple different facets. We kind of look at this as like a pulmonary space, but in reality, it's everybody involved, from the patient all the way up through their PCP and specialist.
But what unmet needs remain regarding screening methods and breaking down any barriers? Or you mentioned a lot of the technologies earlier. Are there any unmet needs regarding those and how they could improve in the future?
A lot of the barriers involved with this, just as Dr. Mercado said, it's dealing with educational components, getting patients to understand that this is out there, dealing with not even just screening, but also incidental nodules, because this is another big piece of this too, where it's screening is important in a high-risk population, but at the same time, a lot of these patients are getting scans for other reasons, whether it's through other symptoms or they're in the emergency department with something and they have a scan done, and many times they can find a nodule. And those nodules, if there's no way to track that, the patient's symptoms go away, they forget about it, and that scan's kind of sitting there because it was done in an emergency department where they've done everything that they should do, but don't have the mechanism to get that scan out to either the PCP or to make sure someone's following it. And then we've unfortunately seen cases where 3 to 5 years down the road, that nodule now has become a lung mass and now is an advanced stage cancer that nobody had the system and wherewithal to track that, because it's impossible to do that to manually. I mean, our system alone does over 20,000 CTs of the chest every year. And that's just my hospital in my small area. UPMC is 41 hospital system. It's a lot of scans. So I think that the other issue and problem is with lung cancer is that a lot of these systems cost money. A lot of education costs money, costs marketing dollars, costs those things. And lung cancer's always traditionally been a tough thing to fund because traditionally speaking, and I don't agree with this, but this is how kind of the common knowledge you see a lot of is, it's the, well, you did it to yourself, cancer. If you wouldn't have smoked, you wouldn't have gotten this. And patients feel that, they hear that, and there's sometimes even a shame component to screening because I don't want to find this because if I find cancer, I know it's my fault. And I've heard that from patients and it's heart-wrenching to hear that. And it shouldn't be. It's an addiction like anything else. I don't think it should be scorned and it should be helped. It should be mastered and worked through. And even with screening, you know, we use that as an educational opportunity to try to get people to stop smoking. We've built programs in place to work with patients, whether it's through therapy sessions, whether it's through our respiratory therapy department, whether it's through getting them medications at low to no cost for nicotine replacement or otherwise. I think a lot of that needs to happen. And I think we need to really move away from the blame cancer and really start putting some funding, some backbone, and some ability to continue to move the needle in the deadliest cancer, no matter what the cause is. It's still the deadliest one, and it needs to be understood and work toward eradication.
And to add to what Dr. Kovacs was saying, you know, as he mentioned, you know, only in his hospital, they're doing 20,000 scans. It's very difficult to find the people that are actually going to see these scans, analyze them, make sure that the patient is being seen if there's something being caught up on that CAT scan. So, you know, I was in charge and I'm still in, because, you know, it's a really moving target that here in the New York City population, we have to do a better job, as I said, in screening these communities. And it's very difficult to actually follow, to have a program to follow these nodules up. Not every nodule needs to be biopsy. Not every nodule is going to end up being cancer. That's one of the problems with lungs, that, you know, if you get a lung infection, that can turn up like a nodule. If you get a scar from that infection, it can end up being a nodule. Certain fungus in the air can make nodules. There's tons of other diseases that makes lung nodules. So actually, to add to what Dr. Kovacs was saying, it's like you can't surgically remove every single nodule you see. So somebody needs to analyze that. So, you know, Dr. Kovacs and I, both UPMC and NYU, we have systems in place that, you know, we have meetings with experts. A multidisciplinary approach is the key to a successful lung screening program. You have a surgeon, you have an oncologist, you have a radiologist, you have pulmonologists, you have nurse practitioners that are calling the patient, making sure that they know that they have to take their CAT scan. And, you know, it's a huge monumental task. It's not easy. Not every place can do it, especially small places. It's very hard for them to do it. And then what happens in those small places, then it falls back to the internal medicine doctor or the pulmonologist or oncologist. And as Dr. Kovacs mentioned, it can be overwhelming. So again, we haven't really figured out a best way to kind of like not only start, but maintain an effective and successful lung cancer screening program.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, George. I think one of the biggest barriers to this is that, you know, really to do this right, to make sure that these things are done. You know, we use the term center of excellence. And center of excellence tends to, you know, you tend to think it's something, you know, it's the ivory tower. It's the big giant places like UPMC and NYU and these big places. But that's not true. It's not necessarily has to be at an academic large center. Those tend to have a lot of resources that can involve with this. But really, I think where it starts is with a physician champion, whether that's in the pulmonary space or the oncology space or even the general internal medicine space. I think finding someone that understands the benefit of moving patients that are high risk for lung cancer screening, understanding that a lot of nodules we find are going to be benign. To be honest, the vast majority of them will. But the ones that are actionable, the ones you do find that do make the difference, knowing how to kind of figure out the players in their system to work toward with biopsies and appropriately biopsy to work toward, making sure that they're followed closely by oncology. It can be small. It doesn't have to be a lot of people, especially in smaller communities, but the process and the system has to fit that. And, you know, one of the things we do is we work on educating them. I'm kind of the head of called the northern tier when it comes to pulmonary. So there's multiple hospitals that are smaller, kind of rural ones within about a 50-mile catchment radius that come to us. And we have worked on education in all of those places to understand, to realize, to kind of move that forward. UPMC, even as a system now, is expanding their screening kind of beyond this center of excellence mindset and really kind of building those systems in communities where there are a high rate of smokers with high risk populations, and making sure they're getting not just the appropriate scanning done, but also the appropriate follow-up and management of when these nodules are found so they're going down the right track. It's a big undertaking. It's one of the newest things we really have in our space. And building this as we go, we've learned a lot about these nodules, but we're also learning really how to manage these efficiently, appropriately, you know, utilizing a lot of our minimally invasive procedures and techniques around the proper diagnosis so that we can get them where they need to be.
Can you guys just kind of maybe summarize where you think that the field of lung cancer detection is heading over the next 10-ish years?
That's the exciting question, because, you know, we're really at a changing moment, and it's a breaking changing moment in our field. Advanced bronchoscopies, interventional pulmonologists, we really now have the tools to really delve into the deeper parts of the lung. And that's where these nodules usually hide. And now we have the tools to go and get them. So the most exciting part is some of us are really good at getting them. Then the next step is going to be like, all right, well, now that we found it, now we were there, what are the options? What are the therapies that these patients can be? Some of them are going to be eligible to be surgical. That would be great because, you know, you're removing. But many of these people, like Steve was saying, they smoke their whole life. They have COPD, emphysema. They're not really great candidates. And sometimes we have seen with, you know, radiation or certain treatments are, again, are advancing and are amazing. This latest technology in biotech and oncology, biologic agents are phenomenal. There's great, great data coming out of that, and we see great response in oncologists. But what we can do from the pulmonary standpoint is also, well, we've seen what the lungs looks like from the inside. We're actually looking at the nodule sometimes right in front of us with these technologies of the barotic bronchoscopy. What if we actually provide a localized type of therapy? What if we can introduce the therapy right there while we're seeing it? And that's something that slowly is being explore right now in certain centers, instillation of therapy via bronchoscopy. And because these systems have been getting so good at finding these nodules and getting really close to them, now we can do something different.
It reminds me of a paper that came out back in 2013 in CHEST, right after the lung cancer guidelines came out. It says the pulmonologist moving from special teams to quarterback. And really, it's kind of comes full circle when where we started to where we are now is that, you know, we were the ones you brought in at the end, right? You're the ones when you had a big lung mass, an advanced stage patient, we would go in, get a biopsy, and there wasn't much you could do, but we'd find out what it was, and we gave them that. And now it's changing completely. The paradigm really has shifted toward these smaller nodules. You know, the technologies like navigational bronchoscopy. Dr. McCott and I both do robotic bronchoscopy. We're some of the earlier people in the country to really start moving that forward, where we can actually use robotic devices and navigate through the bronchial passages in the lungs in order to biopsy these small nodules safely, accurately, and effectively. But that's just building from biopsy. And also staging, utilizing, you know, in one anesthetic event to actually stage the patient at the same time. So we're both diagnosing the nodule as well as staging the mediastinum and really finding kind of a true picture around that. But that's just the beginning. You know, I think that, as Dr. McCloud said, you know, moving this needle with these tools, we now have a conduit. We have a scope leading to a nodule, but we're using it to kind of pull tissue out of that conduit. But what can we put through that? And you're seeing a lot of companies do some fascinating things, from ablative technologies and cryotherapy and direct injectables, whether it's chemotherapies or oncolytic viruses. And now you're seeing space in the electroporation space, where you actually can treat a nodule and perhaps start having abscopal effects in distal nodules as well, as we're activating immune systems. So we're really seeing a huge opening, a huge time frame now, where people might look at this as kind of the golden age of lung cancer, where things really started to move forward above and beyond just systemic treatment or surgical management. And those are very, very important, but there's a lot of gray area in between. So being able to offer a lot of these different options in this, and where you're going to start to tailor the treatment to the patient and really start to personalize that therapy for them for whatever they need based on their comorbidities, that is the exciting part for us to see where this is going. So we work with oncologists right now in diagnosis, but our goal really is to work with them in therapeutics and make a team approach when it comes to treating these early stages. Not just finding them, but actually eradicating them. And that's where I think a lot of these tools, these techniques are really moving toward in the population and especially in early stage disease.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Onclive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Onclive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Onclive and at OncliveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at Onclive and Onclive State of the Science Summit, and follow our Onclive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Onclive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Onclive On Air.